instead of yes and, you're just, huh, what? Why don't you take five, go do a couple laps around your neighborhood?
Right.
Just get loose and we'll start again. Is that going to help?
Sure.
Hello and welcome to episode 67 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan. I'm in Tubing in Germany, and with me, as always,
is Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
And cut. Print that one.
Did you
that
feel,
was good.
You feel that flavor? I tried to spice it up a little bit.
Yep. It was like Rip Taylor.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah. So what's going on in Vancouver, Canada?
NHL hockey playoffs.
That's the answer I was looking for. Your improv has gotten much better.
Really?
Yeah. In the last 30 seconds.
My life revolves around being the world's greatest dad and watching the NHL playoffs. So,
yeah. So how many games are on a day right now?
A lot, because it's the first round. So there's 16 teams, which means 8 games. Yesterday they played 3 of 8, and today they played the other 5.
Okay.
So there's lots. The answer is lots.
But the Canucks did not do well.
They lost their first game yesterday, but in a best-of-7 series, it's okay. No pushing the panic button.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trivia question for you. If every series went 7 games, how many playoff games would there be?
In the first round?
No. In the entire NHL playoffs, if every series went 7 games.
Oh, I can't do the math on that. You tell me. You've done the math, I'm guessing.
No, I don't think I have. I think it's 105.
No. It's more than that, wouldn't it?
Could add some numbers up for me quickly, okay?
Well, you just did 7 times 8, right? So 56.
56, yeah. 28, 14, 7.
Right. What is that?
49 and 56, yeah, 105.
Wow.
That's what I believe.
Great. Now that we know that, we can move on.
Yeah. So that's a lot. That won't happen. There won't be that many games.
No, there won't.
So what's your favorite round of the playoffs before we move on to something interesting?
First round.
Is it?
Absolutely. It's like okay. You get all the games. You have channel surf back and forth, highlights, you know, and I love the fact that you've got usually an early game and a later game, so depending on what time you're home, there's hockey on all the time. It's the greatest ever.
That is good.
Yeah.
All right. So two weeks ago, what did we do last week?
Clicks? Portraits. No, portraits. Portraits.
Portraits was last week.
Yeah.
Before Easter, of course.
Right.
Something I meant to mention on that show and I forgot. One of the trends, and do you see many portraits on the web?
No.
No, you don't look for
I don't look for anybody's stuff for anything. I'm a self-centered, live in my own bubble kind of guy. So, yeah, I think my wife probably looks at lots of people's blogs and pictures and stuff. I really don't.
Okay, that's a great attitude.
Yeah.
One of the trends that's sort of happening with, I guess, newer photographers, and I would include myself in that as well, when I was new, is to sort of make these portraits of everybody being moody and brooding.
Okay.
And everyone's very, very serious and, like, just tremendously mad at the camera. And I try to get away from that. You see a lot of that. And I can tell by the look on your face that I can't see that we're just going to move on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super interesting to me.
You got nothing. Yeah, we'll talk about stuff in your own little bubble from now on.
No, I don't understand why you had to go away from that. I was just listening. It's okay sometimes for me to just listen. You don't.
Okay, so
you need
what I'm
me to slap
is,
you on the back and tell you that you're doing a great job? I'll do that too.
Is that too much to ask?
Well, yeah, no. I love where you're going, this Al. Please tell us more.
Oh, see, I didn't want to ask you because it sounded kind of needy.
Yeah.
So there you go. I'm glad you picked that up. Yeah, so that's a, I wouldn't call it a disturbing trend, but a very, very common trend is to have everybody look really brooding, like they're the, on the, I don't know, the guy from Beverly Hills 90210.
Who's that?
Dylan.
Dylan, yeah.
I couldn't think of his name right away, but yeah. Now I remembered.
I do sometimes like the moody pictures, though. I didn't recognize this as a massive trend in portrait photography, but I do like, I certainly don't think every picture needs to be moody, but I think I might have mentioned it like a long time ago, but I just saw an ad again of the picture that I mentioned to you way back. It was a photo taken of one of the Vancouver Canucks for a ad campaign about like their, you know, basically their merchandise, and they replayed it in the paper the other day, and it's basically taken in a rink, and the lighting is kind of done from overhead. It's very dark and bluey in terms of the tones, and then the way the light is, it basically creates like all sorts of shadows over the eyes, and it looks very cool. Again, shot in a hockey arena, it looks very cool, and I thought, oh, that's a kind of a neat picture that I would like to reproduce sometime or something of the sort.
Okay. I'll check it out. Yeah, it's not like you can never be moody. It's just that it's a lot of it is just all the time. How can I be moody?
Right.
So there's that. Easter. I'm going to start marking things off the list here. Easter. How was Easter?
Easter was great. As great as you can expect when you have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old in the car for like 7 hours going to the in-law's house. No, it was really good. Our kids are great travelers in the car.
What do you mean 7 hours?
Well, you try to get out of town on a long weekend and deal with an accident on the highway. And it was probably closer to 8. So
really,
yeah, it should be about 5.5, which is what it took us on the way home. But going
that's my point is the drive that you're talking about has somehow become this sort of testing ground for people.
Yeah.
Whenever they describe, oh yeah, I went up to the interior and oh yeah, it only took me 2.5 hours. It's like this contest about who can get there, and they're all lies because it does take 5.5 hours. I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah. From where we live to where we are going, and if you're making good time with little in the way of stopping, it's 5.5 hours. But throw in some traffic into that mix, and it's a crapshoot. So it was a long drive on the way up. And, of course, the kids are super excited. When are we getting there? When are we getting there? And we left the house at about 4 o'clock, and it was pretty – well, it was after 11 when we actually got there. So maybe it wasn't quite 8, 7, 7 plus. And they did not sleep on the way down there. So that was awesome. Midnight bedtime. So that kind of threw our schedules for a loop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it was fun. Easter was great. My in-laws live in kind of – very, very country compared to what we're used to down here. So every other house has cows or horses. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of neat for the kids, you know, when you do a 5-minute drive to the corner store and you pass cows and horses and lots of other, I think there's llamas, not llamas, what are those other things called that kind of look like llamas?
Alpacas.
Yeah. So, and it just everything in the way of the kids have just got their heads on a swivel going down the drive to the local store.
And some of the houses have bathrooms on the inside now?
Yes, yes. Flush plumbing. There's actually a hotel in town, or motel, I don't know what it would be considered, that advertises color TV. I made reference to that. I'm like, wow, if they got color TV. So no, it's pretty neat. It made for nice pictures because you feel like when you're in their backyard, they've got almost like a small, they have some farmland. And it feels like when you go in their backyard, you can touch the mountains. The mountains are right there as their backyard. And so on a nice, clear blue sky with the mountains in the background, it's like it's a photographer's heaven for taking pictures.
That's exactly my sentiment. I love it up there.
Yeah.
So that leads me to ask you, what did you shoot? Was it Easter stuff?
Easter hunting around the property. So we had a big Easter hunt, and again, just with our kids and the grandparents and my wife and me taking the pictures. But they, you know, they ran like crazy little bunnies looking for all the eggs, and so I took some pictures for that. And then I also, in my mind, I had a staged shot that I wanted because my father-in-law has a really old, I think it's about a 50-year-old red sort of tractor that he uses for the fields. And so I had this epiphany that I should really, you know, do a set shot with the family and the tractor. And so we did a little shot one morning when everybody was up. I said, okay, can you pull the tractor out and we'll take it in the backfield? And it was a clear blue sky. And I said, okay, let's set the tractor up and let's take a group shot. So we did that. And nice. One of those photos I used for the photo challenge.
Great. When the kids are running around,
yeah,
and running all over, how do you get them in focus?
El servo.
You were using the servo method?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good one.
I didn't do the trap. I used the servo, and again, they do happen to stop from time to time to reach for an egg or to get at something that that is in an awkward position. So that allows me the opportunity to get quick focus and take a shot. Because, yeah, they are not posing during the hunt. They have a mission, and they are going to do whatever it takes to get those eggs.
Exactly. Yeah, they are motivated.
But I have to say, servo on the Canon T2i that I have is awesome. It hardly ever misses. So my kids aren't that fast, well, I guess.
Right? Like you did this outside as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that helps a lot. There's a lot of light and a lot of contrast, so you can get focus.
Yeah,
so that works. That works very well. Inside in lower light, it can be difficult, but still, it's a good way to go.
Okay.
Yeah, we did the Easter egg hunt with the 9-month-old, which is a slightly different.
You have to toss them like 3 feet away from her, and then you have to present her with a lot of encouragement to go and get it.
Oh, we went the other way. I just berated her for not finding them. And they're still hidden. They'll stay hidden until next Easter.
Right. Then she can find them.
Yeah. That's it. I'm not going to go through this rigmarole again.
Yeah.
No, we hit them sort of out, you know, open-ish. More so because I didn't want to forget where they were and have her find them later when I, you know, when I'm not around.
Right.
But no, she actually did quite well. She went around and found them, and she moved a lot faster than I thought she would, so I had to use the trap method.
Now, is the Easter egg hunting, is that done the same way in Germany, or was this something that you brought over as a North American kind of tradition?
I think it's pretty similar.
It is? The egg hunting is a big thing? And the dyeing the eggs and all that?
Dyeing the eggs, definitely.
Yeah.
That comes from Europe anyway.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know where these things come from.
Yeah. So they do that, and then I don't know if the egg hunting works exactly the same. They do the egg hunt and all that, but I don't think they have the one where it's like a, you know, like a city sponsored one where all the kids come out and, you know, find the eggs. Like right. they still do that in Vancouver, I think.
Yeah, and they had a local one right near where we were. We just did our own, and we didn't go to the big community one.
Right. So. Yeah, so we did all that, and the good news, like for me, the whole photography point of this, which you have to really look for it,
yep.
Is
like the egg hunt.
Yeah, because you had a couple of people running around, like you know your two kids and likely your wife who was pushing them out of the way to get the chocolate.
Right, my wife is not a good egg hunter.
I have been on an egg hunt with her before.
Yeah, she's not good.
But she does give it the old college try, though.
Yeah, she's find one, eat one. So that really distracts from the ultimate prize.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But she had the added benefit of her sister wasn't there, though.
Yeah, that's true. Her sister usually scoops them all up.
So there is that competitive nature. I've seen, the one year that I was there for Easter, I was wondering why you are all putting helmets on. Point being, the photography part. Okay, really, let's get to it.
Okay.
Is that when you had multiple people running around, setting up a photo trap would work, but you would be missing a lot of shots.
Right.
Like you have to sit and wait by one egg until they get it. Well, who's that? Who's going to get that? And, you know, how long will it be and what's going to happen before then?
And maybe it's the strange looking ant. You don't want that shot.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But see, with, you know, our daughter running around by herself, the photo trap was the much better way to go.
Right.
And plus we were inside, you know, so servo may not have worked as well.
Okay.
So that's why I went with that.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. All right. Photo challenge. Let's get right into it.
All right, I'm ready.
So you brought it up. You brought up the photo challenge was leading into this week's episode. I wanted to do something, use 2-point lighting.
Okay.
And did we talk? We talked very little about 2-point lighting.
No, we didn't really, because you kind of left it a mystery, and I said I might Google it, although I didn't, and I just kind of decided in my head what it meant, and maybe I did 2-point lighting, maybe I didn't.
Well, how many sources of light did you use?
I used 2.
Okay. Then technically you did use 2-point lighting.
Okay.
Let's start with yours. It is, in terms of actual 2-point lighting and technique, it's probably a little confusing because, in a way, it could be sort of duplicating 3-point lighting.
Okay.
In the nature of it. But let's just get into how you did this.
Okay. So I decided where I was going to position my subject. This is my father-in-law, where I wanted the sun, which is creating the light on his left side of his jacket and on the wheels of the truck, and that I wanted that to kind of be, as best I could angle it, sort of a 45 degree up and above on his left, just at the time of day. It was probably about 10 a.m. so the sun's up and creating sort of the backlight there, and then I set up my flash bear off to the left, camera left, and angled back to basically light up as best I could the tractor and him. So I got a bear flash over on the left and shooting it, I think, at about half power in order to get enough light. Because again, with the sun coming in so hot on the one side, it completely casts dark shadows over both my subject and the tractor. So, so I'm firing that off at him, and I think it's about an f8 and a 1/200th of a second shutter speed.
Nice. So yeah, the sun is 1 point, the flash is the other.
Right. That's 2-point, right?
That's 2-point lighting.
Okay.
Fortunately, the way it works is because the sun is, shoots off in many directions, it actually lights up your background as well and provides ambient light.
Right.
Now, still 2-point lighting. You do not fail.
Okay.
I chose a more classic 2-point lighting setup so you could see what a controlled setting would look like. We'll get to mine in a sec.
Okay.
But I love your picture. This is great.
Thank you.
It's really well done. It's a great example of taking an outdoor portrait. In fact, that might be an episode that we do down the road.
And I did an outside portrait last week, but I actually wish that this was my entry for last week, because we were talking about environmental portraits, and I did this one. As soon as I took it, I was doing, like I said, the point of getting everything, I was just getting everything set up, having no intention of making this the challenge entry. I just was getting set up because I was going to do a family group shot, but I wanted to make sure I got the lighting and everything right. So when I got everybody out there with the kids, it was only going to take like 30 seconds, get them all in the tracker and bang, bang, bang. And then we go home, or we were home, but you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I took this as kind of just a test shot, and I said, okay, I'm happy with that. And then when I sorted through the photos, I'm like, you know what? I really like that photo.
I also like that you kept him off the tractor.
Yes.
Like, the instinct would be, for me, for most people, would be, put him on the tractor or maybe leaning up against the tire, which would have kind of had him disappear into the tractor.
Yeah. And I to be perfectly honest, I did take, after this, I did take a picture of him on the tractor, but I definitely like this one better. The one on the tractor I like, it's perfectly fine, but again, it's more what you'd expect, and I like this one better. I like the pose, and I like the separation.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the angle, because the one of him on the tractor was a bit more, like, I like this one. It sort of gives a bit more three-dimensional feel to it because of the angle the tractor's on, as opposed to being more flat. The tire on the left, like, I like that angle, as opposed to the other angle I shot this picture of when he was on it, was just a more flat tractor. You know what I mean? If it's more head on.
Yep.
So,
I hear you.
Yeah.
The one thing, the one criticism I would level, would be having the horizon go through his head there.
Oh yeah, yeah, I see what you mean.
Could be distracting. There's probably a better way to get some separation, like to find a more neutral background. Or angle a little bit lower so his head's up in the sky.
Right.
Other than that. And you know how I know he's a good farmer? He doesn't want to pull a hammy.
That's
it's
right.
It's important. Important to get out there and stretch before you farm.
Yeah, it is. Good yeah. tip.
Another point for our listeners who have no idea who I'm talking about is your father-in-law looks an awful lot like your brother-in-law.
My father-in-law looks a lot like... No, he doesn't.
In that picture?
Really?
Don't you think so?
I don't see it.
But they're not related. That's the point.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'll have to cut that out now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure who benefits from that comment.
Okay.
All right.
Who benefits from that comment? Well, certainly the listeners. Everybody wins on that one.
All right, let's see your picture.
Okay, my picture. There you go. That's Folker.
You look at the, yay! This is done in your house because I know that backdrop.
Yes, that's my curtains.
Yeah.
Actually, my kids' blackout curtains so that she can sleep. But yeah, that's Folker. His nickname is Mother, by the way.
Okay. Thanks.
No, didn't get that one.
No.
Well, awesome. I'll be playing the Hamptons next week.
So tell us about 2-point lighting.
Okay, so this one's real simple. I wanted to go the other way. I kind of had an idea that you would go outside and use the sun.
Okay.
And so what I wanted to use to do my 2-point lighting was real classic, controlled sort of studio lighting.
Okay.
And so what I did is set up one flash, one strobe in a reflective umbrella to the camera right.
Yep.
And that's it. That's the only light I actually used. Now, in the room was completely dark, so there was no ambient light whatsoever. All the light is coming from that one source.
Yeah.
Now, in order to create the second light, I used my bounce board just out of frame.
Okay.
On his right side.
Yeah.
And so you can see that sort of filling in his ear and sideburns and that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I took a picture to compare it without the bounce.
Right.
That's my 1-point lighting.
Yeah, I think I like that picture better though.
Do you? Well, yeah. There's your like the moody.
Yeah, I don't know that it's really that moody, but again, I see what the bounce did, and mm-hmm. And again, probably maybe most people would like that better, but I don't know. When I look at those two pictures, I like the, and again, just a preference thing. It's the you know. Enough said about that, but I actually prefer the 1-point there.
Okay. However, you can see the difference.
Yes, you can definitely see the difference.
Okay. So that's all mine was, just a simple headshot. We took it in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I asked him to leave his hat on because wearing a red hat with a green jacket was a great choice.
Okay.
A little Christmassy yeah. in April. But generally, when you take someone's picture with a hat, it's very difficult. You get goofy shadows on their face,
yeah.
Which you can sort of see a little bit of a difference that the bounce makes in that situation.
Yeah.
So, okay, well,
That's great. You know what? You're actually a liar because you said on the last episode, and maybe I have to go back to re-listen. But you said you were not going to use. Oh, I think you said you're not going to use 2 flashes.
Correct.
Oh, I see. So you didn't lie.
No, I specifically did this exactly how I said I would do it.
Oh, okay, so sorry. Sorry for calling you a liar.
I wish you weren't a liar.
No, you're not a liar.
Yeah, but well, one of the other ways to go about doing this is to actually use another light as a fill.
Right.
But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to keep it simple for the 2-point lighting because I want to show how there's... our listeners, there's ways to achieve this without buying a lot of equipment.
Right.
So like your shot, for instance, you technically could have done with no flashes. You could have used a silver bounce board.
Right.
To bounce light into your subject's face.
Right.
And you would have needed a fairly decent size bounce board to get enough light on his face and the tractor.
Yeah.
But believe me, that you could do it. So that was what I was getting at with 2-point lighting. But 2-point lighting leads us into this week's topic.
What is this week's topic?
3-point lighting.
Oh, yay.
7-minute abs?
Is there an episode that's like 16-point lighting?
No, we're not going to do that. We're going to stop at 3. We'll stop at 3-point, but we'll hint at 4-point lighting.
Okay.
So first of all, I want to point out that actual 3-point lighting might not be completely relevant to your current workflow. That's you, the listener, whoever, that actually getting out and technically using 3 lights might not work for you just now.
Okay.
I promise it is relevant to lighting and photography and the entire thing. It will make sense to you, and you'll notice it in places.
Okay.
Okay? It's a very standard lighting setup. It's sort of the basic lighting.
Okay.
Basic lighting for film, TV, photo. So let's get aware of it.
Why do you got to, like, talk down to us?
I'm talking on an even level.
No. I feel like your tone is in a manner of you're all high and mighty because you know what this is.
Okay, do you have 3 flashes?
No, I have 2 flashes.
I have 3, therefore I can talk down to you.
Okay.
It's really just simple math.
That makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Sorry, sir.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
We ready to go?
I'm ready.
I'll turn the car around right now. How many times did you say that on the trip up on the eight hour drive?
No, I didn't say it once.
Okay. I will swerve into oncoming traffic.
I basically said, no, we are not there yet. That's what I kept repeating.
Are we out of movies on the DVD player? No. What's the problem?
Yeah. Yeah. Have you, like, used up all the crayons in the universe yet?
Daddy drinks because you cry.
Yeah, that's right.
That sort of thing. So, okay, so 3-point lighting. I lost my place.
3-point lighting.
Yeah, I was busy talking down to you. Okay, that's where the notes is. Talk down to Adam. Now, this can apply to, like, if you're using just constant lights, like regular movie lighting, or the sun, obviously, or it applies to flash as well. That's the beauty of this.
Okay.
So it's a starting point. It's a starting point, and you want to move on from there, and it generally does get more complicated. Like, it can get into 16-point lighting, like you pointed out.
Right.
But it's all based on the same sort of thing. Like, eventually, you know, you'll want to add hair lights and modeling lights, and it gets overdone really quickly. So when we talk about 3-point lighting, what does it mean besides the fact that there's 3 lights?
I watched on YouTube, because when I looked up what 3-point lighting was, and so just watched a little, I don't know, 2-minute YouTube video done by some, like a community college that was put out for their students in a photography class or something. And my understanding was you have a backlight, right? Uh-huh. And then you have a key light, and correct, then you have a fill light.
Correct.
Okay. And I know what all of those things mean.
Okay. Your main light. Your main light that lights your subject is the key light.
Yes.
So that is what it is. I think I don't think I need to explain that anymore.
No, that's the main light.
So 3-point lighting, you got your key, your fill, your backlight.
Right.
That's it. So your key light, your main light, usually soft. It doesn't have to be. In your case, it wasn't. The sun was not soft.
Right.
And the sun was, I would suggest that the sun was your key.
Okay. Because it was lighting the background as well?
More so because it was just your main light. Like, it's the larger source of light, and the flash was secondary.
Okay.
Like I said, yours was a little unconventional because having your key light be from behind your subject is not normally, not a classic way to do it.
But wouldn't the sun always be that situation? I guess if you're using the sun facing towards somebody, then it is going to be the light from the front.
Right. So your key light's usually soft. Like in my photo I took, it was into an umbrella.
Right.
Okay. It doesn't have to be. Gesundheit.
That was my wife.
Sorry.
Still Gesundheit.
Okay.
So you have that. Then next you have your fill light, which is does what it sounds like. It fills in the little shadows, you know, on your subject's face.
Right. And we've used bounces for that, and we've used like pop-up flash and like the high-speed sync and all those things as fill.
Yeah, that's more like an on, like high speed sync would be like an on axis fill, like that's right on the camera.
Yeah,
but yeah, now you're basically if you're going to key your subject from one side, you're going to create a shadow across their face.
Right.
Now, what you want to do is sort of fill in that shadow a little bit, and that's what the fill light is.
Okay.
Now, most times that is soft as well.
Yeah.
Again, it doesn't have to be. There's no rules.
And just probably like turn down a notch. Like if you're using strobes to do this, you know, you've got your key light set on maybe an eighth or a quarter, and the fill is going to be way down at maybe 1/32 or 1/32nd power. Does that sort of make sense?
It makes total sense.
Okay.
In fact, it's so much sense that you're skipping ahead.
Okay. I didn't mean to do that.
You're welcome to do that. It's absolutely. We get into what's called lighting ratios and how much light should fall on your subject. Now, I'm just going to keep talking as if it's a person we're lighting.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a person. It could be anything. But for ease of making this getting you to bed quicker.
Yep. Which is what we do this podcast for.
That's the whole motivation.
Yeah.
Okay. So with the fill light, it's usually a soft light. Sometimes it's just simply bounce. Sometimes if you don't want to set up a second light like I didn't with Volker, is I just wanted to get that the white card in there to fill in.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the last light you have is the backlight. Backlight, rim light, you can call it a kicker if you want. Kicker sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah, sounds like you play in the NFL.
Yes. And so what this is meant for is basically for separation of your subject.
Right.
To separate your subject from the background. And that a rim light, generally the difference between a rim light and a kicker is that a rim light basically provides that sort of halo around the edge.
Yeah.
Whereas a kicker tends to kind of be off angle a little bit and actually catch some of the face.
Okay.
It's from behind as well. And so that's the very minor difference. I kind of use them interchangeably.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm talking about that light, I usually call it a kicker because it sounds like you're in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah. So, and for me, kicker is almost always a hard light. Just because I like to be able to control it. I don't like to have it bouncing everywhere and spilling everywhere.
Yeah.
So I like to be able to control it because oftentimes it's coming pretty close to your lens. And if it's light bouncing around, you're going to get flare.
Right.
So it doesn't have to be, does not have to be hard light at all. Okay. But yep. That's what it is for me. For me, when I shoot with a flash or a regular lighting kit, when I shoot video, I spot the light down. Like zoom it in,
yeah,
and use hard light,
yeah, and that's so, how you showed it to me originally, and I like that effect. Although I do like when you shoot a sunset, and you're shooting right into the sun, and the rim light that you get around a person shooting in that situation, I do like the flare that you get from that.
Yep, there's no proper way to do it necessarily. It's what you like.
Right.
So if that's your preference, fire away.
Okay.
Oftentimes you're going to find that the, when I say oftentimes, I think almost always, you're going to find that the rim light, like if it, you present that little halo around your subject, is going to be blown out. It's very difficult. That's sort of how it goes, is it ends up, going way too hot.
Yeah.
That's okay. I have no problem with that. And in fact, I don't think many people do. It's okay to blow out some pixels. And that's a good opportunity to do it.
Yeah, I like the effect. Again, not always, but once in a while, I do like the effect.
It's sort of that. This is what I mean by the basic setup.
Right.
So whenever I go to light a subject, like if I'm doing a proper portrait, like a proper headshot for corporate headshot or something like that, this is exactly what I do.
Okay.
So you mentioned earlier about ratios, about having the fill be lower than the key.
Right.
Why would you do that?
Because you're going to create, if you have your key light and your fill light be somewhere in the same neighborhood in terms of power, well, then you're going to lose – some of that contrast and some of the light shadows that create sort of shape to your person's face.
It's like I wrote it down for you, but I didn't.
Okay. No, I just, that's what it, the way it makes sense to me anyways.
That's the answer. So you start, you know, lighting your subject with the key, you're going to create those shadows that we talked about a couple minutes ago. And you don't necessarily want super dark, high contrasty shadows, but you do want some shadows.
Right.
Otherwise, why bother taking the flash off the camera, right?
Exactly.
So you want to maintain some of that shape, and therefore, we get to control the amount of contrast. That's the good part.
Right.
So, for instance, do you have any idea how we refer to the ratio?
No, idea.
It's really quite simple. It's 2-1, like 2-1, 3-1, 4-1.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. Now, there's actually a reasoning behind that. 2-1 is double. That makes sense, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you alluded to the fact that if we had an F8, or sorry, a 1/8 power on the one side of the face, we would have like a 1/32 on the other.
Right.
Any idea what ratio that is?
That is a 3-1?
4-1.
4-1. No, yeah, my math isn't good. 4-1.
4-1. Now, because, and here's how we determine it, is that a 2-1 is actually a one-stop difference. Remember how a long time ago we talked about in stops, how it's half as much light or twice as much?
Yeah.
That's how we talk about it. So if we light the person's face to, let's say, an F8, and then we go one stop. I just stumbled over that horribly. We want a one stop difference on the one side of their face than the other. That will give us a 2-1 contrast ratio.
Okay, I think I'm with you.
Okay. Now, if we go two stops, if it's two stops darker, now we're going to get a 4-1.
Okay.
I hope that kind of makes some sense.
It does make sense.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that's going to mean when we talk about power on the flashes. Like, power on the flashes makes sense to me because I'm not thinking of it in terms of stops. I'm thinking of it in terms of just power ratios. So 1/8
right.
to 1/32 makes sense in terms of a 4-1 ratio.
Right. Now, of course, you have to take into consideration how far from the subject your lights are being positioned.
Right, right.
So if all things are equal, then yes, that's a great way to go. And if, you know, your flashes are both the same age and have, you know, fired the same number of times and the same power output and all that. And for the most part, that's going to be good enough.
Right.
In fact, when I'm lighting someone with flashes, I don't use a light meter. I go by eye.
Yes.
And oftentimes my eye is looking at the power on the back of the flash.
Yeah.
So that's how I do it.
Okay.
But I kind of know what I want to achieve. And so it's important to have like a baseline in television, like in just your regular television, in interviews or whatever it is. Any idea what a sort of a basic contrast ratio would be?
I'm going to say the 2-1.
3-1 is the basic.
Okay.
So you're very close. And I promise I wasn't saying that just to contradict you.
No, I was just thinking that maybe for television, they don't want too much contrast.
No, they don't. They don't. And so, go ahead.
But a 3-1, right, isn't a 3-1 going to create a greater contrast than 2-1?
It is. It doesn't sound as big of a contrast as you think.
Okay.
It is somewhere between one stop and two stops difference. Like 2-1 is a one stop difference from each side of the face.
Yeah.
4-1 is two stops, so it's kind of in between. It's sort of a weird, you know, 1.5 stop kind of situation.
I'm good with that.
That's where they.
I'll take your word for it, flat out.
Okay. And again, that's sort of in your everyday life. That's not going to mean much, and I don't think of it in those terms necessarily either. But what does happen is if you've seen a lot of television, that's what they're doing. So when you try to emulate that and try to make your pictures look like that, that's what you're trying to copy a 3-1 ratio.
Okay.
And of course, you're moving from there. You might say, okay, great, I want a much higher. So we'll go, you know, I'm going to go 8-1, which would be, you know, very contrasty. Again, this is all personal taste. If that's what you want, who am I to say that you're wrong?
Right.
So there you go.
Okay.
So now, where do you put the light? So now, I mean, we're assuming that we're no longer lighting with the flash on the camera.
Right.
So where does your key light go?
A little off axis to one side, probably not at a very steep angle, maybe, I don't know, 15 to 30 degrees, something like that.
Could be, yeah. I never thought of the specific angle. But you're right, off to the one side. I mean, you don't have the light on the camera anymore, so get it off to the side. That's the whole point. That's going to cast your shadow. But I mean, it's interesting to me that you say it's off to the side a little bit. Because the instinct, and this was absolutely my instinct from the beginning, was to get that way off to the side. Much like when you get your first, you know, fast lens, you want to shoot everything at f1.8 because you haven't been shooting there before.
Right.
And you want to show everybody that you can shoot blurred background.
Yeah. I think you make a good point, because I think that was my initial instinct too. And I think what I noticed right off the bat is that if you shoot way off axis, how big the shadows are cast across your subject's face.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it seems to look, I don't know, awkward.
It does. But it does point out that you're shooting off-camera flash, and so therefore you win.
True enough.
Yeah. And I promise you, I'm not talking down to you in this, because I still do it. I don't still do it, but I really did it for a long time because I was so excited by having the ability to not have it on camera, that just ran with it.
Right.
And so just slightly off to one side, right or the left, that's where you want to keep it. And you'll find that just a little bit will give you that off-camera look and create nice shadows on the face. So my basic lighting kit, even for video, is three lights, and for photography I have three flashes. So it's I don't get any more complicated than that.
And when you go out to shoot a portrait session, do you generally use all three flashes?
I do.
You do.
I do. I wish I had a fourth, actually, just to make it a little more confusing. But that's when we get a little bit more in detail. I don't think they call it 4-point lighting. I have no clue. They might. We stopped at 3-point lighting, just moved on.
Okay.
But yeah, I generally use all three. But especially for shooting like interviews for video or stuff like that, definitely use all three. And that's almost always a classic 3-point setup where, any idea what order you light them in?
I'd probably start with the backlight first.
Yeah, you can do whatever, actually.
Oh, okay. I find in terms of the way that makes the most sense to me is I start with the backlight or rim light, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. and then the key, and then the fill. Because the fill doesn't make any sense, obviously, until you've done the key. So right. I would think you'd always do the fill after the key, and then, yeah, I guess the backlight could come at any point. But I usually think of the backlight relative to the background, so I find it's easiest to start at that layer and then add the key light and then add the fill.
That's a great way to do it, actually. If you're going to build the light, which I recommend that you do, it's after a certain number of photos that you've taken that you start to – doesn't really matter what order. You kind of know where the lights are going to go and what intensity they're going to be.
Right.
So you can fire them all up and your test shot's going to look – correct,
right,
which is kind of where I get to most times, but that's because after years of lighting in layers like that, so yeah, start with the backlight and then add the key and add the fill. You can't go wrong.
Great.
So there's that. Now here's the one tip before we wrap this up, the one tip to working fast, and I use this all the time, is if you make your key light soft enough, And sorry to ask you another question.
Okay.
How do you make your key light soft enough?
How do you make your, you can make it in an umbrella and bring it very close to the person that you're taking a picture of?
There you go. Make it bigger and bring it closer. That's how you soften your light up. We've talked about that in the past. Bigger is softer and closer is softer.
Okay.
So if you want to get the sort of look of the almost look of three-point lighting with only two lights, like you don't have three lights, correct?
Not unless I use the sun.
Not unless you use the sun. So if you're going to go ahead and do a studio lighting setup with your two lights and you want to create three-point lighting, it's not exactly the same.
Right.
But if you keep your key light very close to the camera axis and make it very soft, you will get a nice wraparound and you can get away without using a fill light.
Okay.
So that's my tip. And that what that does, the main reason I do that is I can then still have a kicker and use my third light to light up the background. So that's where I would like a fourth light, is to be able to have the classic key, fill, kicker, and a light to, you know, shoot through a plant or something.
Yeah.
But don't have, and mostly I don't always have time for that. So I try to bring the softbox or the umbrella as close to the subject as I can.
Okay.
So there you go.
Great tip.
That's it. That's what three-point lighting is. So hopefully you'll start to notice it in, you know, TV and movies and stuff like that, and see how you can apply those basic concepts to your photography.
All right. I will. I will look for it.
Do you have a challenge for next week?
No, I've got no challenge. Okay. My challenge is to make it through next week.
It says post-Easter blues.
Yeah.
It's a long way to Victoria Day.
Yeah. What, do you have a challenge? You see, you've been the challenge guy for a while, that now I've just been mailing it in and say, oh, Al will come up with a challenge.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to come up with one that's tremendously boring.
Okay.
But it will apply down the line. So I'm thinking ahead here.
Okay.
I want you to, how do I put this? I want you to ruin an exposure of one of your shots. I want you to blow it.
So, okay, so we're not talking about I'm doing this in post-production. I'm taking a shot that was okay, and now I'm wrecking it in post-production. Is that what you mean?
No.
You just want me to screw it up while I'm taking it.
I want you to get it wrong in the camera.
Well, I do that every day. This is the easiest challenge ever.
Challenge fulfilled. I want you to drink a lot of coffee. That's the challenge.
You're right.
I want you to blow one.
Okay.
And then fix it in post.
And show the difference.
Yep. Show the difference. And we'll talk about how you did it. And basically, are you going to shoot RAW or JPEG?
I'm going to shoot RAW.
Okay. Enough said. Good tip. Good tip, Adam.
Thanks.
And then potentially we'll discuss the difference between RAW and JPEG and why you should shoot RAW. And this will be a good example.
Okay.
Okay. The one thing I want to get across to you is I don't want you to get lazy now when you shoot. You still should get it right.
Okay.
But if you don't, there you go.
Okay. I will do this.
Where can people see your Easter photos?
SchwartzChronicles.com.
You said that last week. I should have known. I should have remembered.
Yeah. What about your stuff?
It's alanattridge.com. Same as last week.
Okay.
And Google Plus. We got Google Plus up there.
Yep.
Which I don't know if you noticed, they changed the look entirely.
I have not noticed. I have not been on Google Plus for a little while.
It threw me for a bit of a loop. Oh, like, wow, that's different. But yeah, if you want to find both of our stuff, we are at twohosers.com, where you can find links to everything you need to know. Flickr, which we sort of still use.
Yes.
iTunes.
Kind of, yeah.
It's all on there, and all archived episodes of our show.
Right.
So check that out at twohosers.com. Until next week, Adam.
Yes.
Get out there and make better photos.